Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, September 9th, 2014. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. David Stone testifies he saw Charles A. Capone strangle his wife, Rachel Anderson. Environmental groups sue the USDA Wildlife Services Agency over the poisoning and killing of wildlife in Idaho. And the Latah County Human Rights Task Force discusses health care as a human right. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the studios of KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Charles A. Capone's friend David Stone of Moscow testified today he saw Capone strangle his estranged wife, Rachel Anderson, outside Capone's auto body shop on the south side of Moscow the night of April 16, 2010. According to an account of the Moscow trial in the Lewiston Tribune website's live blog, Stone said when he encountered Capone strangling Anderson on Anderson's GMC Yukon between the car and the shop, he said, "What the expletive are you doing?" And a startled Capone turned around and told him to shut up. Stone said Capone told him he was in with him on it now, and he knew Stone had a family. Stone said Capone told him to go outside the shop and get a tarp, and he returned without the tarp and saw Capone still on top of Anderson strangling her. He said at that point Anderson was not moving. Stone then said he participated in Capone's efforts to dispose of the body, including taking the body into the shop and placing bags over it. He said Capone told him to put his cell phone on a shelf in the shop because Capone said if anything comes down, they'll never be able to tell we left the shop. He said he and Capone both drove in separate vehicles to a location behind the Dynamart convenience store in North Lewiston, with Capone driving Anderson's Yukon. He said they left the Yukon there and traveled back to Moscow. Stone said Capone told him to get tire chains, and he went to the City of Moscow shop where he worked and retrieved some old broken chains from a pile there. Stone testified he helped Capone wrap Anderson's body with the chains, which he estimated to weigh 50 to 60 pounds. They placed the body in the back of Capone's Durango, and then Stone drove with Capone in the passenger seat to the Red Wolf Crossing Bridge over the Snake River near Clarkston. After driving across the bridge twice, they then stopped in the middle of the bridge and threw the body off. Stone also testified that back at Capone's shop, Capone ordered him to put everything they had used to dispose of the body that was in the back of the Durango in a garbage can, and they drove in Capone's other vehicle, a truck, to a blue dumpster on Palouse River Drive and dumped the garbage can. Capone's attorney D. Ray Barker began cross-examining Stone this afternoon, asking about his lies to police after the murder and his decision to tell the story of the murder he had just told the jury. Asked about one of the lies to a Clarkston police officer and a Soton County Sheriff's deputy, Stone said, "We're talking about a time period when I was lying about pretty much everything." The trial is scheduled to last 3 weeks. Tomorrow, Barker is expected to continue cross-examining Stone. At the murder trial, a member of the family that owns a nearby industrial park said yesterday he witnessed an argument between Capone and a woman the day Rachel Anderson disappeared. Tim Fountain told the court he was in his front yard playing with a family dog when he witnessed a vehicle skid to a stop at Palouse Multiple Services, which was the shop Capone owned, and a subsequent argument between the female driver and Capone. Fountain said the woman got in Capone's face, flailing her arms in anger. Fountain said Capone, owner of the Palouse Multiple Services, maintained his composure, but Fountain said Capone sounded like he was restraining his emotions. Fountain told the court it appeared to be just a man and his wife just disagreeing over something. Fountain was unable to make out facial features, but said the woman was about the same height as Capone, only thinner. He also said the darkness made it hard to positively identify the vehicle, but it was similar in shape to the white GMC Yukon Anderson was driving. Fountain testified he returned to playing with the dog, and when his back was turned, he heard a female voice say no and heard an audible inhale followed by another no. He said he then heard a loud bang like a tire blowing out or metal hitting metal. Whatever the sound was, Fountain said it definitely came from the shop Capone owned. He said there was silence after the sound. Fountain said he started walking towards the shop and got within 35 feet. He heard sounds emanating from the shop like a table being pushed around and then the sound of a pressure washer and saw another man speaking with Capone. He said he also saw the Yukon drive off, although he didn't see who the driver was. Fountain said he thought everything was fine and returned to playing with the dog. Testimony also came yesterday from Lewis Soule, a former industrial park business owner. Soule told the court he walked in on Anderson and Capone, who were in what he said looked like a heated conversation about a month before Anderson disappeared. Soule said he was in Capone's shop when he heard the two arguing, and he said of the argument it looked like it was fixing to get heated. Latah County Sheriff Corporal Tim Best testified when law enforcement executed a search warrant on Capone's shop April 22, 2010. They found a brand new 12-foot by 20-foot shiny sheen tarp, which records show Capone bought at Spence Hardware April 17, 2010. Best pointed to a photo found on Capone's cell phone taken a month before Anderson's disappearance, which shows a silver tarp in the same place as the new brown and green one. Fountain told the court his brother bought a parts washer capable of heating water to 1,300 degrees at the shop after Capone went to prison for an illegal firearms possession charge in 2013. Fountain said there was residue in the washer that seemed to look different. He said, I always assumed it was used for cleaning car parts, but it has a different residue at the bottom of this darn thing that looked kind of to me like bone dust. Four environmental groups have filed notice of their intent to sue the Federal Wildlife Services Agency over their killing of what they call nuisance wildlife in Idaho. The groups led by the Center for Biological Diversity want the USDA agency to stop trapping and poisoning predators and stop using explosives to blow up beaver dams until they start analyzing how the killings impact wildlife, such as grizzly bear and bull trout, which are protected under the Endangered Species Act. The other environmental groups joining the lawsuit are the Wild Earth Guardians, the Western Watersheds Project, and the Moscow-based Friends of the Clearwater. The Wildlife Services killed 3,300 animals in Idaho last year, most of them coyotes. The groups are concerned the agency is killing too many coyotes, which keep foxes, badgers, and ravens in check. Those animals hunt sage-grouse, which are under consideration for Endangered Species Act protection. Wildlife Services spokesperson Carol Bannerman said 80% of the agency's work involves relocating or dispersing wildlife that cause problems. She said half the animals killed are invasive species such as starlings, which damage crops. Bannerman said managing damage is the goal, not the eradication of native species. The Clarkston City Council voted 4-3 last night to once again put the city's Planning and Zoning Commission's conditions for potential cannabis retail businesses on the table. Last month, the council rejected the zoning rules recommended by the commission that would have specified where marijuana stores could be located in the city, seemingly blocking any cannabis retail in the city. The decision to revisit the issue came when council member George Nash said he's changed his mind on the issue, because the state could force the city to accept pot stores anywhere where other retailers are allowed in the absence of specific zoning for cannabis stores. According to a report in the Lewiston Tribune, Councilmember Brian Kolstad, who also voted in favor of revisiting the issue, said, "If we don't make some kind of decision on zoning, we run the risk of allowing regulated marijuana in places we don't want it to be." The Washington Liquor Control Board has allocated 2 retail cannabis licenses for the area. Nash said he favors medical cannabis, but has been against recreational use. However, he said, "I'm not voting on marijuana. I'm voting on zoning." On Saturday, the Latah County Human Rights Task Force tabled at Moscow Farmers Market with a theme of healthcare as a human right. I spoke with Joanne Muneda and Don Crowley of the Latah County Human Rights Task Force at their table near the fountain in Friendship Square on Saturday morning.
A lot of people just fall through the cracks because they can't get Medicaid and they don't have enough money for any insurance either. Mm-hmm. So it's a tragedy, really. And it's a tragedy because it wouldn't cost the state anything. And we're losing out on money that's available to us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's this ideological issue that people glom onto when they're making their political decisions in Idaho.
Yes, I agree.
Okay. And so you are explaining resources, and you're also doing blood pressure checks. Probably anything more at this particular farmer's market table as far as health goes. We're recording an interview for KRFP 90.3, and Joanne wants you to participate in this interview. What's your name?
I'm Don Crowley.
Okay, and what's your role at the Moscow Farmers Market Latah County Human Rights Task Force table today?
Well, I'm just helping with the booth on the expansion of Medicaid, the hopeful expansion of Medicaid in Idaho.
Okay, yes, and Joanne seemed to be indicating from her gestures that you can talk about healthcare a little bit. And
He's on the committee that did the research for this project.
Yes, that's true.
For research for the Latah County Human Rights Task Force project, okay. And I know the governor has had his special task forces doing research on whether Idaho should expand Medicaid. And this summer, just a couple weeks ago, they recommended that we do, and this was his second task force in so many years.
Task force, and they both recommended the expansion of Medicaid, and they both times it's been ignored. The state legislature isn't really interested. They haven't even really brought it up, and they've ignored it for both the last 2 sessions of state legislature.
Right. Well, I mean, Otter's task force just made its, well, this is a second task force, just made its declaration a couple of weeks ago in the middle of the summer. So, I mean, the legislative session is coming up.
Fair enough. But the legislation creating the expansion of Medicaid has been there for several years.
Right,
and so they have ignored it for several years. But several states are changing, several states that are in some ways similar to Idaho. Wyoming is finally beginning to contemplate adding the expansion of Medicaid. And, you know, besides the obvious human benefits, which is what we're interested in, mm-hmm. It has significant financial benefits for the state.
Yeah, we are definitely hearing that. And some legislators at some time must give an explanation as to why we won't even address this issue, right?
One would hope. I mean, the only types of arguments I've heard, which to me, of course, don't make any sense, but the types of arguments I've heard have simply been a desire to not take any more federal money. But, you know, that we're in a town that has lots of federal money coming through the University of Idaho. We drive on highways that have federal money. There's federal money all through the wheat fields and everything all around here. So to pick on people who are under the poverty line because they don't have on the abstract notion that you don't want to take any more federal money makes absolutely no sense at all.
Yeah, and now I am remembering just one claim made from who I think was a lawmaker, and he said that, well, we don't want to get dependent on federal money that might go away, and then we have this obligation. And how do you react to that?
Yeah, that's an interesting argument, except Medicaid has been around, not in the expanded form, obviously, but Medicaid has been around since the mid-1960s, and the federal government hasn't cut any of that support and has no intention of cutting any of that support. And so to claim that, oh, if we take it now, it might disappear later, is just a fantasy.
They have a fantasy of the Tea Party taking control in Washington, D.C. and cutting all that stuff.
That would be their fantasy, perhaps. But to seriously argue that the federal government, after expanding Medicaid, would then cease to fund it is just nonsensical.
So you've done some research on maybe the effects on all of these sick people or people with health care needs around Idaho. What is happening to people right now because of the lack of Medicaid expansion?
Well, I mean, obviously, health care is a complicated subject, but the availability of Medicaid for people who have health needs is very important, and otherwise people who have health care problems opt to not go to doctors, opt to not go to the hospital, and problems get worse, and eventually, of course, lead to major disasters. So it is very difficult to quantify in any particular case the exact effect it would have, but giving people the opportunity to be able to get medical care is we think a human right, which is why we put up the statement from the UN Declaration on Human Rights, and it's an extremely important aspect of being able to live in modern society. And as everybody knows, medical care is extremely expensive, and therefore people get shut out of it if they don't have access to something like Medicaid.
Yes, I can speak personally. For the first time in my life, I feel like I can maintain my health using the healthcare system I can afford to for the first time, now that I've been on subsidized healthcare since, I guess, April.
Well, that's good. I mean, glad it's working. But that's the argument we want to make, is that everybody should have access to at least basic medical care. And the way to do, there are various ways you can do that, but the way that's on the table right now is the expansion of Medicaid. And this really is silly for Idaho not to do this, and it harms poor people in Idaho, and it's economically, I said that backwards. It is a disadvantage to Idaho economically to not do it. Those are the main points we want to make.
Yeah, so from the point of view of, say, business, it would hurt the state.
It hurts the state, it hurts business, it hurts hospitals. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that Wyoming, after joining Idaho in its failure to expand Medicaid, is suddenly deciding that they better take a harder look at it, as is Pennsylvania, is because hospitals are putting pressure on the state to say, well, this money is available for us to provide services to people, but we're not getting it. And so a lot of hospitals are putting pressure on state legislatures, and that's eventually beginning to happen in Idaho, although, we're well behind the curve.
That was Don Crowley of the Latah County Human Rights Task Force speaking at the task force's table at Moscow Farmers Market Saturday in Friendship Square. You also heard from Joanne Muneta of the Latah County Human Rights Task Force in that clip. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report, KRFP Moscow Pullman. The Pullman City Council tonight is expected to vote on a labor agreement extension with the Teamsters Local 690 for Public Works and Parks and Recreation Department employees. The council will also vote on a resolution accepting a low bid from Casey General Contractor for equipment replacement. The council is expected to set a date for a public hearing on the city's six-year transit development plan as well. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, we're expecting partly cloudy skies tonight and then clear skies all the way through Monday, with a low of 45 tonight. mostly sunny tomorrow, high 67. Highs will be around 67 Wednesday and Thursday, 72 Friday, and around 78 Saturday and Sunday, around 80 on Monday. Lows will be 38 Wednesday night, 36 Thursday night, and around 42 Friday and Saturday night, 45 Sunday night. Currently, we've got fair skies, 69 degrees at the Moscow Pullman Airport. Thanks for tuning into the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next, we have our weekly documentary from Making Contact, all about concussions in sports. And at 6:30, Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. At 7:30, Dave Weaver's in with the Tuesday Night Grab Bag. And we'll have more music and entertainment throughout the evening here at KRFP Moscow. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day, be sure to buy raffle tickets for the Citizen 2 hybrid bike that we are giving away, brand new 2014 will be customized for you, and tickets available at the station, 114 East 3rd Street. Enter by the alley, halfway down the alley, and afternoons and evenings are the best times to purchase tickets. Also, you can purchase them from KRFP DJs, or you can purchase them at Moscow Farmers Market Saturday mornings, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. The drawing will be in late October. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assists with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse.